The title I've given to this message this morning is A Matter of Trust and Wonder. I want to suggest to you that there are three stages that Simon Peter goes through from the outset of this passage to where it closes at verse 11. We see something significant that has taken place. And as we look at those stages, I want to you to ask yourselves, where would you put yourself? Which stage would you consider your life to be at this moment? That's something that we can ponder upon this Sabbath day and ask the Lord's help to know where exactly we stand. Where are we in the spiritual pilgrimage? Where are we in matters of trust in the heart and the things of God? The first stage I would suggest is a waiting stage. We see this in verses 1 and 2. It says, on one occasion while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he, that's Jesus, was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, and he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. Simon Peter isn't introduced by name at this point, but he's one of the fishermen who's there at the lake shore. He isn't there, I would suggest, to be there to hear Jesus. We learn from the passage that he's been out all night with his other partners in the boat, and they had caught nothing. And, you know, when you're living hand to mouth, catching nothing for a whole night's endeavor is demoralizing. And so Simon Peter's emphasis at this point, as this opening of this chapter, is on his livelihood, how to provide for he and his family, his household. And so he was cleaning the nets, preparing everything, doing what he can to, in the hope that this next night's fishing would go that much better. I wonder where you stand this morning in the reason to coming to church. Maybe you're here because it's important for your spouse and you are tagging along. But for you, you're still feeling on the fringe of things. You haven't really perhaps seen the fullness of who Christ is, the significance of what he's done on the cross. And maybe you're just at that point of some understanding, some flashes of clarity, and yet at other times it just seems not so relevant, not speaking to our hearts. And this is a period that I would suggest is a kind of waiting period, learning, sitting at the feet of Jesus, trying to understand not only where we are in relation to him, but the purpose of life. What, perhaps, you know, at this stage, we are just a baby Christian. There is some understanding, but we haven't really moved on from the infant milk. We're still drinking the milk. And be nourished bit by bit by that, but yet to grow into a sense of trust and confidence in who God is. The story I told earlier about Claudia, you know, she was 20 years old when the story took place, and from a Christian family. She was part of a Christian union in La Paz University. And yet, for 20 years, she walked the streets through La Paz and kind of oblivious to the huge social needs around her. She was from a well-to-do background, and she didn't feel any sense of responsibility to those around her until God grabbed her attention that morning and spoke to her. So she was in that waiting period, until she discerns the still and quiet voice of the Lord. For Simon Peter, it's not his first encounter with the Lord Jesus. Back in chapter 4, we look at verse 32. Jesus comes to Capernaum, Peter's hometown, and he goes into the synagogue to preach. And it says in verse 32, they were astonished at his teaching, for his word possessed authority. And Simon Peter was there as part of the gathered people worshipping on the Sabbath. Verse 36, we see after Jesus preaches, a man that possessed by an unclean spirit, and Jesus orders the evil spirit to come out of the man. And it says in verse 36, they were all amazed and said to one another, what is this word? For with authority and power he commands the unclean spirits, and they come out. And reports about him went out into every place in the surrounding region. And after that gathering in the synagogue, Jesus comes back to Simon Peter's household, where his mother-in-law is in bed with a high fever. And Jesus heals his mother-in-law. And many are brought to that household, to the door that night. People with illnesses, people with bothered with evil spirits. And Jesus ministered to each one and sent them away whole and well and in their right mind. And Simon Peter saw all of this. And we too, we can be in church Sunday by Sunday, coming to the prayer meetings and being involved in other church activities. And there can be, you know, that stage where we are just at the beginning, at the starting. And, you know, we need to be built up. And we hear, we understand, we can believe at this stage. If I was to use a football analogy, it's like at the stage, such a person is on the reserve bench, on the substitute bench, wearing the team strip, but they're not part of the field of play. They're part of the team, but their time hasn't come. They're on the touch lines. They haven't been called upon to the pitch. Well, the second stage is one of being willing. In verse 3 of chapter 4, it says of Jesus, he's getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's. He asked him to put out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people from the boat. It's no coincidence that Jesus kind of homes in on Simon Peter. Simon Peter thinks perhaps it's coincidence that he's there. Jesus is hard pressed. There's a crowd moving in, wanting to hear his every word, maybe wanting to touch him, some with diseases, wanting to be healed. And he's got his back to the water, and there's nowhere further for him to withdraw. And so it's for a very practical reason, he thinks, if I get into a boat, I can put a wee distance from myself and the big crowd that has gathered and speak to all easily, just across a few yards of water. And so Simon is asked to participate, and he's glad to put at Jesus's use his own boat. And it's a challenge to be engaged. And maybe this engagement comes about somebody challenging us to come and help out with, you know, maybe a children's outreach, a holiday club, perhaps come to the prayer meeting, which perhaps not been in the habit of going to, and somebody encouraging you to step up the game, get more involved. And you know, this is the second level of being willing. And it goes on to a second challenge, because when we get back to the text in verse 4, it says that when Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And now we see Simon now with kind of the rationale of a fisherman. He knows his industry. He knows how the time of day to go fishing. In the brightness of the Palestinian sun, you go fishing at night, not in the middle of the day. And what Jesus is asking him to let down the nets for a catch in the middle of the day just does not make sense. And you can hear it in Simon's reply. He said, Master, we toiled all night. We took nothing. That's the time when you catch fish. And this is a lean season. You know, he's thinking, you know, we're preparing our nets for, you know, for another session this night. And hopefully it's going to be better. But, you know, this is ridiculous going out in the middle of the day. And so there's that voice of rationale, and we can all associate it with it, because sometimes we feel challenged, disturbed, our peace is perhaps taken away. We feel a sense of prompting to speak to someone, to put our name forward, to help out. You know, maybe we're going to be a speaker in a holiday club, maybe respond to being part of this team Lewis to go to Costa Rica. And one part, there's a sense of excitement, and then suddenly is the reality check, and think, well, I don't speak Spanish, never been there, what am I going to do? I've got no cross-cultural experience. This is absurd. This can't be for me. And there's all the kind of human rationale. And then the expense of going. You think, well, wouldn't it be better to send the money and help with the church there rather than me go? Well, I say not, because the Lord calls people. It's through relationships that the gospel is made known. It is lived out. It is expressed. The very fact of going is an expression of love and concern for a people that have a half light of understanding what the gospel is, and our presence in going brings that understanding. So Simon Peter says this, but at your word, halfway through verse 5, but at your word, or the NIV says, you know, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. Because you say so. This takes trust, doesn't it? And a sense of confidence in who Jesus is. Simon Peter is struggling with that rationale. I know best about fishing. Jesus, he's got a carpentry background. Why would I believe and trust in going to fish in the middle of the day? Think also about his reputation. There he is in his hometown. Probably the whole town is out on that shoreline. And how's Simon Peter going to respond? Is he going to let down the nets in the middle of the day and make himself look absurd? Is he going to put his reputation on the line? And there is that real struggle going on within him. But the breakthrough comes when he says, but at your word, but because you say so, I will. And this, brothers and sisters, is crucial for the Christian life. If we don't get to that point of being able to trust in the confidence and the faithfulness of God, then we will never progress further. We will always remain in the lower category, in the lower stage. It takes faith, doesn't it? It takes confidence in God's promise. We don't see the outcome. Simon Peter isn't assured his nets are going to be filled with fish, but he's prepared to take it because he's seen enough of Christ, his preaching with authority, his healing those with diseases, his ability as like a prophet to deliver those that possessed by demons. And he says, because you say so, I will let down the nets. And this brings us to this final section. And it's a section of that I call wonder. And this is where there is all the excitement of the Christian life. And the excitement comes when we rest our reputation on God's faithfulness and we move forward despite our own natural inclinations and thinking, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea. But moving forward with a sense of urgency and confidence, recognizing the Spirit is pushing us forward. We need to discern, yes, but let us never be a people so discerning that we never recognize the quiet and still voice of the Lord. There needs to be that openness. There needs to be that reckoning that the God that we read of in the pages of Scripture is the same today, speaking to us. And we need to be listening. We need to be ready to heed his voice. And look what happens, verse 6. When they had done this, when they had followed Jesus' instructions, they enclosed a large number of fish and their nets were breaking. Verse 7, they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. Imagine that. So many fish that the nets were breaking. And they're heaving it up. And they think, oh, this is just too heavy to get on one boat. They call over the other boat. And between them, these, I don't know how many fishermen there were, four, maybe more. They're hauling this huge net that was straining under the weight of this catch. And the gunwales of the boat are dipping under the waters of the lake. And it's an extraordinary catch. And note the reaction. You know, Simon Peter hadn't caught anything the previous night. He wasn't jumping up and down thinking, wow, with all this fish, maybe I can take life easy for a day or two. I can sell all this. No, he has a sense of being appalled about what has happened. This miracle says to him that this man in the boat, great teacher that I've seen him to be, great healer that he is, great deliverer of demons from those that are possessed, he is more than all of that. There is something dawning in Simon's mind that this is something, somebody otherworldly. And we see how he falls to his knees, verse 8. And he says, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. Depart from me, for I am a sinful man. Did he not at that moment sense the holiness, the presence of Christ, part of the triune God in his boat? Was he not appalled by who he was? Just an ordinary fisherman. Trying to walk with the Lord, but one foot in the world. And we've all been there. And maybe some of us are at that point today, of feeling such a gulf between who we are and the magnificence of a God come in person to make himself known to us, urging us to come into relationship, urging us to trust, to follow. And Simon Peter is having this Isaiah-like reaction. You know, Isaiah went into the temple, he sees the glory of the Lord, and he says, woe is me, for I'm a man of unclean lips, and I have seen the Lord of glory. And he expects to be annihilated because of he, unholy, has come into the presence of the Holy One. And as something of what Peter is encountering, here is God in his boats, and he is absolutely overwhelmed. And he says, go away from me, Lord, depart from me. It's a very human reaction, isn't it? And I don't know if I told you this story before, but some of you won't have heard it, so forgive me if you've heard it already. But when my wife and I were called to interview by OMF, the mission that we used to work with, we had this interview which I didn't feel went well at all. It was like they had uncovered things about me and I said things which I regretted I had said. I thought I'd spoken too much. And I just thought, there's no way they're going to accept us. And we were asked to leave the room while the council deliberated. And I just wanted to go home. And I just felt, you know, who am I to put myself forward to serve the Lord? And I felt so unworthy, so incapable at that moment, so inexperienced, so rash to put my name forward to volunteer to go as a missionary. And I thought, who am I? Let me just go home. Let me just tend to just ordinary things. there's no harm in doing that and being faithful to doing that which the state of your life that you find yourself in. And when we were called back in, we had been accepted. And my wife's reply was this, and I share it with you in case you're at that kind of level as well, that she said, you know, before you accepted Martin and me into OMF, we thought the mission was tremendous, full of dynamic people, motivated people, people who are holy, people blazing a trail. And it seemed the standard was so high until you accepted Martin and myself. And it's like the standard was brought right low so that we could be brought in. Simon Peter felt unworthy. And it could have been the excuse, no, Lord, you know, don't have anything to do with me. Choose someone else, for I'm unworthy. I'm a fallen human being. I'm fallible. And Jesus knows all that. He knew that Simon was going to deny him three times. He knew it ahead of time. He said that Satan has asked to sift you, but I have prayed for you that your faith may stand and that you will come through this ordeal. Jesus knows exactly who he is dealing with when he speaks to you and me. It's no barrier to presenting ourselves. It was said of Hudson Taylor that he was a man small enough for God to use. And so just wrapping up, just moving into the last part of verse 10. Jesus says to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. We see Jesus as fully human, engaging with us, understanding our frailty, our doubts, our concerns, our sense of weakness, our sense of sinfulness. And he's saying, don't be afraid. You know, from now on, you're going to be with me. You'll be engaged in my work, in my ministry. I'll be with you. As he reminds the disciples when he leaves them at the time of his ascension, you know, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me, therefore go and make disciples. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. And so we have this sense of assurance that as we step forward, step into deeper waters, out into the unknown and the unfamiliar, that we go because he has called. And he who called will go with us. He, by his grace, his power will be made manifest through our own weakness. People will see more of Christ and less of us because the beauty of the gospel work is getting a glimpse of who Christ is and not seeing the minister behind it. And verse 11 is the response. It's so simple. In these few words, it says here, and when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. You know, it seems so compact, doesn't it? You think, well, where's the kind of the reasoning, talking it out? Well, let me go away and pray about it. Let me go and seek the advice of others. I don't know if this is God's calling. Maybe I just need to take some time out, read the scriptures, be sure of it. And I don't knock those things, but they should never be a reason for us to say, no, God is not calling me. When they had brought their boats to the land, they left everything and followed him. It was the only response that they could have, wasn't it? They had seen enough of Christ, something of his glory in bringing those fish into the net. Here was master over his dominion of creation. Here was the creator in the boat, resplendent and holy, before whom they felt unworthy. And they were caught up with this and they think, the Lord wants us to be with him, to do his work. There's no argument. I want to do it. I feel absolute compulsion. I need to be with where the Lord calls me to go. Let me pray. Father,